From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Jeff Maciolik announcing show number 27, recorded Tuesday, August 1st, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible, template-based code generator for .NET. Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100, online at codesmithtools.com. And don't forget to visit peterbloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at PETERBLUM.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Carl about .NET Reflection.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes. I'm here with Scott Hanselman, as we always are. This week, Scotty, what are we talking about?
Reflection. .NET Reflection, the most abused thing within the framework, right? It's the, I've got a nail and my hammer looks like reflection.
Yeah, I know that there are vast performance differences between different elements of what we call reflection. So this ought to be a good show.
So what kind of things have you used reflection for yourself?
Well, actually, I've used reflection to create plugins. It's nice to be able to just dynamically load an assembly and examine it for types and for interfaces in particular. And if those interfaces exist on a class, I would instantiate the class with another call, cast it to my interface, and start calling the members of that interface.
Right. So at that point, your reflection is done and you've cached that interface.
Yes.
Right, so reflection, of course, is the kind of the introspection, the runtime evaluation of what an assembly, a class, a type can do. You can basically say, for some type, if I've got the Carl class and I want to say, give me all of the members of this class, give me all the properties, the constructors, I can get all that information without knowing anything ahead of time, not knowing anything compile time about that class.
It's the kind of stuff you had to be Don Box to do with COM, right?
Yeah, back in the day it was hard, now it's not hard, and this is where we get into trouble. Reflection's abused a lot. There's a lot of really powerful things that you can do with reflection. Of course, the idea is that if you can ask questions about an object without having seen the object before, you can do things like object relational mapping, save the object into the database. You can do things like n-hibernate to map the object to tables in the database. Where you get in trouble is when your objects get larger and larger, and then you get collections of objects, and you still find yourself poking around in reflection. So if you had an object, the Carl object had 50, 60, 100 properties, and you had a collection full of 100 Carl objects, you start doing the math, n number of objects times X number of properties, and it gets really expensive.
Yeah, and if you walk the object hierarchy, you could be going down lots of paths, right?
Exactly. If you've got an object that's just by itself, asking questions about its properties is pretty straightforward. But if you've got an object, like you mentioned, that is part of a larger object hierarchy, asking it about itself, its parents, and walking the tree can become very, very expensive. There's some really good articles up at MSDN. Shrinkster/H1K has got a good article about common performance pitfalls.
Okay.
Buried within that MSDN article, there's a particularly interesting figure called What is Slow in Reflection at Shrinkster/H23. And this talks about what aspects of reflection are pretty fast, pretty light, and what's very costly.
Cool.
A lot of people don't take the time to measure this stuff. And really, when you're using reflection, if you do one thing, measure your code. Profiling becomes so important when you're using reflection.
Well, let's summarize what's fast and what's costly.
Right. So object.getType, asking an object what its type is, pretty lightweight. Objects know their types. You can ask them very quickly. Asking objects if this type is equivalent to that type are pretty straightforward. Getting the type of a member, pretty straightforward. These are all very lightweight methods.
Yeah.
Where you get in trouble is like get custom attributes. So asking an object for any particular custom attributes that live on that object, And where you really get into trouble, like you mentioned, is get custom attributes when you pass in true for recurse and it walks the entire object tree.
Right.
That's about the most expensive thing you can possibly do in reflection is ask the object, do you have any custom attributes? And ask all of your children, do they have any custom attributes? And roll them up.
Now, is that just because of the scale of the number of properties and trees that you possibly get as your objects get bigger? Or is it because that there's some sort of inefficient mechanism that searches these things?
I think that those are the kinds of things that traverse the depth of the object hierarchy.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to, it has to ask not only what attributes exist, but then it has to resolve the types of those attributes.
Okay.
So typically you would put a custom attribute, right? You're asking for, get custom attributes. You want to know what are some attributes that I put on that may be in various and sundry assemblies. That can get pretty expensive if those assemblies haven't been resolved yet.
Hmm.
Most often though, people are using reflection for custom attributes. They have an object and they want to add the Carl Funky database attribute. Asking for that is expensive. Now, asking for it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it only when you use the recurse bit that it gets expensive? I mean, what if you're just looking at an object that has 15, 20 properties and you want to get an attribute on one of those properties?
If you do it once, it's no problem. What you want to measure, what you want to profile is, am I doing this all the time in the course of standard running of my application?
Right.
If hitting a regular page in an ASP.NET application involves 50 reflection calls, you need to ask yourself, how CPU bound do I want things to be?
Hmm.
If you've got an ASP.NET page that does 50 reflection calls just in standard business, just the standard path through that page calls reflection, it might work fine, 10, 20, 100 users concurrently, but when you start getting into big scale, you have to ask yourself, is this value added? So then you want to think about caching. The example that I can give is DOSBlog, right?
Mm-hmm.
DOSBlog inherited from code that was inherited from another guy.
Mm.
DOSBlog's got a really interesting template language, right? You've done the templates on your blog, your intellectual hedonism blog.
Yep.
In the blog templates, we've got our own macro language. So we say angle bracket percent title percent angle bracket. And then what we do is we parse that template, we do some caching, and then I look for a property called title within the macros class. Problem is, previous versions of DOSBlog, we will go and interrogate that macro object. Do you have a property called title? Tell me about that property. What kind of type does it return? Yada, yada, yada. And then call it dynamically. Every single page view for every single item on that page. So if your front page of your blog has 20 items, we're going to do reflection costs 20 times. This has typically been the most complicated part of this particular blog software.
Yeah.
The most scary. But it worked. So no one ever looked at it. Last night, about 2 a.m., I was looking at it, trying to chase down a totally different thing, and realized, well, this is just stupid. The type itself in this particular instance, in this use of reflection, isn't changing. The title is going to be the same place it is every single time, right?
Right.
All those macros within your template in DOSBlog aren't changing.
So are you planning on changing the way that that works, or did you? Or?
Well, so that was about 2 a.m. when I figured that out. So about 4:30 last night, or this morning, when I figured out just caching that would be the right thing to do, it took a little thought because we have expressions and sub-expressions, and the DOSBlog macro language supports passing in parameters. So it's pretty complicated. Basically, we're letting you call functions from our template engine.
Mm.
So basically, I just started filling up a hash table. There were some threading issues, and I started keeping track of this stuff. So we were interrogating and allowing the template developer to look at fields, properties, and methods. So it was a very flexible way of doing things. So these things in reflection all derive from a thing called member info, right? Information about the member in a class.
Right.
So we also support custom macros. So DOSBlog knows that you might want to call a macro on a class that didn't ship with DOSBlog. So we'll go and resolve all that stuff for you. Once we've done it, though, we needed to cache that. So we cache this member info object. Now, deriving from member info are the three different kinds of things a class can have. You've got your methods fields and properties. So you got a property info, a method info, and a field info.
Yeah.
And then we just keep track of those. On properties and fields, you call get value, and you say, hey, give me the value of that property, give me the value of that field, all done kind of dynamically.
Okay.
And then on methods, we say method, I think it's invoke member. Now, I've cached all that now, and we spend more time executing code and less time interrogating code. It was a really silly thing to have never caught, but I think that happens a lot when people start using reflection, because you get it working,
yeah,
and then you never really visit it again. You never come back. Caching your member infos is a really, really quick way to get some performance benefits when you're using reflection.
It'd be nice if there was a cache built into the reflection system, wouldn't it? Then you wouldn't have to do any of that.
It would, but reflection's one of those things where they want to make it work for everybody. So I think they set it up to be as truly as late bound as possible, right? It makes sense that you never know something might have changed. But you bring up a really interesting point. So this is going to get a little more advanced. Maybe we'll blow a few minds here, because I found this really interesting. So you know about the code DOM, right? The ability to kind of emit code at runtime.
Yes.
So you can use reflection or you can use the code DOM. At VS Live 2004, I think it was Josh Holmes did a talk on reflection versus the code DOM at shrinkster/H1V as in Victor, and has an interesting discussion about when one might use reflection and one might use the code DOM. A lot of times people spend reflection CPU cycles accessing properties. Basically, you have a property called foo that could be on an object, but you just don't know enough about that object at runtime. Your example of using interfaces is always appropriate, right, to think about, am I using reflection or should I be using interfaces?
Yeah.
Right, because once you get that interface, you use reflection to get the interface, and once you've discovered that, oh, the Carl object implements ifoo, all right, I'll hang on to an ifoo reference, and then I'm fast, fast, fast.
Yep.
That's great. So sometimes you want to look at reflection code and see if an interface is being more appropriate. But there's a thing called fast property accessors, and there's a number of people who've been doing work on this. There's a really great article at Code Project. That's at shrinkster/H25. So check this out. Some of the situations that you might want to retrieve the value of an object property or maybe a field where you don't necessarily know enough about that member until runtime would be like maybe writing a sorter or a comparer to do a sorting of an array. If you've got a collection of objects and they're all different, you might want to do some sorting, some dynamic sorting on that. Perhaps you might want to do filtering based on values of particular members, or serialization, right? There's the XML serializer, but a lot of people write their own serializers. We've written a couple serializers at Carillion that serialize objects into formats that are not XML, like name value pairs and things like that. So this article up at Code Project talks about getting property, talks about getting the value of a property of an object. So ordinarily you'd say like type of Carl dot get property, and then you'd put in a string the name of the property. So if the Carl object had a foo, you'd say type of Carl get property foo. You get back a property info. So this is a generic reflection object that knows about that particular property, and that operation get property is expensive, right? The act, right. The asking of that.
All
is
the
expensive.
Gets.
The get, exactly. Now, the next thing is once you've got a hold of that property, you have to go and say, get the value of that property. And this is where it gets a little confusing, because in reflection, everything is twice as hard as if you did it by yourself. Ordinarily, you just say, carl.foo. And in one line, you've said, give me the property value of the Carl object called foo. In reflection, you have to get the property itself, kind of get the handle to the method. And then get the value from it. So you say get property, you get a property info, you say get value. So, this works fine, but when you have to do it in a loop, it gets really, really slow. So with this reflection.emit, this is a namespace within the .NET framework that allows you to generate code dynamically. So this article up on Code Project that I'm talking about, this shrinkster/H25, has a really interesting way of doing things. Basically, he's dynamically generating a property accessor at runtime, emitting the get of that into a tiny little assembly that's just specific for you, and then letting you call that and it's strongly typed. So basically you're taking those two lines, compiling them up and saying, really give me the actual handle to the foo on the Carl object, and then I'll cache it.
And it's faster than reflection.
Right. And it's faster than reflection. Exactly. It's about 30 to 50 times faster.
Wow.
Now, it's still only about as half as fast as using compile code, but it's pretty darn interesting.
Yeah, I'll say.
There's another great article at Code Project at shrinkster/H28 that's about fast dynamic property accessors with C#. And this one is really interesting. He's done a very nice job measuring and quantifying what's fast and what's not. And he creates an interface called iPropertyAccessor. This interface has a get and a set. Okay? So this is a little interface that he's going to use, and he will create implementations of iPropertyAccessor that know how to get and set one kind of property.
I get it. So he's got a getter and setter for each type.
Right. So he'll get it. He'll have an iPropertyAccessor, one instance of an iPropertyAccessor, for each type property combination.
Right.
So if the Carl object had five properties and he needed to get to each of them, he would end up with five instances of an iPropertyAccessor in a hash table somewhere.
Neat.
Make sense?
Yeah.
So he's actually getting one iPropertyAccessor per property.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty clever. So he actually walks you step by step through how he's emitting the IL and then caching these automatically. He deals with certain types, and you can extend his stuff to support different types that your properties might be returning. He's using things like the define dynamic assembly in the module builder and things like that. And this will work in .NET 1.1 as well as in 2.0.
So speaking of 2.0, what's different about reflection in .NET 2.0 than in 1.0? Or 1.1, rather.
So Roy or Osharov has got a couple of things about that at shrinkster/H1W and has got some articles about what has changed. And then at shrinkster/H2O, there's information about what is updated in Reflection 2.0. Some of the things that are really interesting from a security standpoint is the notion that you could load an assembly just for purposes of Reflection.
Yeah.
So basically, you could load something in a reflection-only context. You could load an assembly and ask questions about it, about its attributes, information, but you couldn't actually execute the code. This allows for some of the loader restrictions to be relaxed and lets you reflect over the objects, get information about them. You can also reflect over the method body. This is a new thing, a method info we talked about when you get a hold of a method, but now there's a new method called get method body. This actually gives you the IL back from that particular method. So you're actually getting a byte stream of the intermediate language. You could do all sorts of stuff manipulating your code dynamically. This is pretty advanced stuff.
My mind just went to a couple of places where I could use that. That's really cool. Are there any performance differences between Reflection 2.0 and 1.1?
The word on the street that 2.0 is something like 30 to 40% faster, but I personally only have anecdotal evidence, but it is faster than 1x. How much faster, I don't know. Just because it's a little faster, though, doesn't mean that one has carte blanche to go and be evil with it.
Sure.
Right? Reflection is so abused right now, and that's really what, if you get one thing out of this particular podcast, it's measure, really, all day long.
Yeah.
Use as much as you can to find out, am I doing the right thing? A balance, you're going to use a little reflection. Sometimes you'll use interfaces. Sometimes you'll use code DOM or reflection.emit to talk to your objects.
Have you seen Rocky Lodka's CSLA.net by any chance?
Yeah, that's good stuff.
He uses reflection.
There's a lot of reflection in that, though.
Yeah, he uses reflection to do a multi-level undo, which I thought was a brilliant use of reflection.
There's some really mind-bending stuff that you can do with reflection. For me, working at a financial services company, we want the balance between ease of development, where reflection makes things easier if we can serialize objects, and scale to be really well balanced. Mm. You don't want to pay for it every single day on every single transaction just because you saved a developer 10 minutes.
Sure.
But at the same time, though, if it takes a developer 2 weeks to fix something to make it faster, you have to really balance those things out. We use a combination of reflection and code generation that, to get the scale that we need to. And, you know, that involves using all of those three tools where one would ordinarily use just reflection and some of those slower APIs, like when we were talking about what are the slow APIs. Get custom attributes is just one of them. All of the get APIs are pretty costly. Activator create instance is pretty expensive, as well as invoke member. These are the kinds of things you want to cache.
I always thought about activator as one of those things that, you know, the Uber geeks used because, you know, create instance. Because, you know, in VB, we have all sorts of ways to create objects and run them. I mean, why would you use activator create instance over new, for example?
Okay, so activator create instance is the really late bound, I want an instance of an object, and all I have is the assembly qualified name. So activator.createInstance is what you would typically use in a plugin pattern. If I want to have an iPlugin object and I've got three different guys who've created three different assemblies in different languages, but they all implement my iPlugin interface, I would get their assembly qualified names. That's the class, comma, and the assembly name. So Carl.plugin, comma, Franklin's would be in the Franklin's.dll. I would put that in my config file. I would say activator create instance, and I would hand it my assembly qualified name, and then run around with reflection inside those types, finding the one that implements iPlugin. Once I find that, then I know how to, you know, get iPlugins very, very quickly, and then I can hang on to them. So then the reflection cost is pretty low. Now, using new, of course, is you have to know the object at compile time. You have to bind to it. Mm. With reflection and with a plugin style architecture, a provider architecture, there's no actual .NET assembly reference to that type. Everything's incredibly late bound.
It seems like performance is a big concern of yours. Are there any lists to go to where people talk about, you know, here's the top 10 tips for improving performance with reflection? That kind of stuff.
The MSDN article from last July is a really good one, the Shrinkster/H1K. If you're really, really concerned about getting some hardcore reflection, there's some new stuff that Daniel Canzolino is doing with Link on reflection at Shrinkster/H1Q. It's pretty hardcore.
Okay.
If you are confused by this whole podcast and you want information about reflection just generally, take a look at O'Reilly's Programming C# Chapter 18. You can get a copy of that at Shrinkster/H1S.
Oh, they have the whole chapter online?
Yeah, I think so.
Great.
And then if you're into reflection already and you're looking at method infos and poking around and calling things dynamically, take a look at Roy Osherov's method info visualizer, right? Remember how Visual Studio's got pluggable visualizers?
Right.
He's got one for visualizing methods that are dynamic within your debug sessions at Shrinkster/H1X.
Roy's done a lot of stuff with reflection. He's also got something on deep reflection, doesn't he?
He does. He did a talk at TechEd on deep reflection. It was a 400-level talk, and it's at Shrinkster/H1Y.
What does that mean, deep reflection, anyway?
He was just basically saying, we're going to dig deep into reflection. He went into an IL debugger. He showed the debugger visualizer. It was pretty hardcore. This was at TechEd Israel this last year. So the point here is that I've spent a lot of time looking at DOS blog code. I spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks looking at a lot of Carilion code where we did some reflection. When you're doing things that are typically outside the scope of your average developer and you start getting into a little bit more senior dev where you're doing dynamic plugins, code generation, dynamic object serialization, you start getting into reflection. It's really, really powerful, but don't take these methods for granted. They're very expensive. But if a method is going to be deterministic, if it's always going to return that this type has the same attributes every time, or that method info is going to be the same every time you ask for it, consider measuring, then doing some caching, measuring again. If the caching adds the performance you need, then, you know, maybe you're free and clear. Otherwise, you might want to think about using the results of your reflection to do some emitting of IL, actually generate the code at runtime. We do that with our object serialization. We got a 300 or 400x performance boost when we went from a reflection-based serializer to a reflection.emit-based one. You know, if you look at like the way the XML serializer works, if that used reflection every single time you serialized, it would kill you.
Yeah.
But we know that the XML serializer actually generates code.
That's an impressive number.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is the thing. I mean, if you're using Reflection just by itself, kind of raw, and you're doing stuff in loops, for loops, going on and on with Reflection, you have just a chunk of code that's just begging to be optimized. There's virtually everything with Reflection can be squeezed a little harder and get some more performance out of it.
All right. And we'll keep watching your blog for new revelations about Reflection performance improvements as they come up.
Oh, yeah. I'm always looking for this kind of stuff. And I'm always trying to figure out whether I should use like the Code DOM, which lets you produce any high-level .NET language, or whether you want to use like reflection.emit and a method, an object called the method builder, lets you actually dynamically generate methods in memory. You know, the Code DOM will create DLLs, create EXEs. Reflection.emit lets you get down to the little bit, kind of the surgical level, and generate the actual methods and entry points and objects at a very low level. So reflection.emit you would typically use when you want really tight control over your IL, when you understand IL. While Code DOM is the kind of thing you'd use to write your own code generation tool. Or if you want to write code and have it come out as either C# or VB.NET. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Reflection will make those work.
I'm not anxious to go out and learn how to write IL, though. You know,
well,
but then
somebody
again,
is, though. And that guy, that one person, who's that guy or gal who's listening to this show,
more power to you.
Touch the life of one child with Reflection.
Yeah. Well, Scott, if I had to reflect over this past half hour, I'd say it was a pretty good show. Wouldn't you?
Cool. I know I'm just vibrating with information that I want to share about Reflection. I'm realizing that this show was just not complete enough. There's probably another half an hour to go into more detail about like the new dynamic method stuff in .NET 2.0.
That's another show.
As an alternative to Reflection.
Yeah, that's another show. We'll save it. Until then, we'll speak to you next week on Hanselmans.